Hey, everybody. Welcome to the NYC Real Estate Podcast. I'm Mark Levine, your host. I'm also one of the owners of EBMG, a New York City property management company. Before we get into the show today, which we have a great guest, you can email this show at nycrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's nycrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. And I'd love it if you could subscribe to the show if you haven't already and share it. And give it a rating. That would be amazing. That helps get it into the ears of other people. So today's guest, we have Ingrid Matovitz. Hey, Ingrid.
Hi.
So you're the partner and the co-chair of the Condominiums and Cooperatives Practice at Seyfarth Shaw, a New York City real estate firm or New York real estate attorney. And I would like to give you the floor to let everybody that's listening at home kind of get a sense of who you are, what experience you bring to the table of today. And then we'll get into our topic, which today we're covering e-bikes and electric scooters and everything that goes along with them and storing them in buildings. So I will give you the opportunity to go at it.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. As you said, my name is Ingrid Matovitz. I'm a partner at Seyfarth Shaw, and I co-chair the firm's Condominiums and Cooperatives Practice. In addition to that, I co-chair the New York State Bar Association Committee on Co-ops and Condos, and am a member of the New York City Bar Co-op and Condominium Law Committee. So eat, sleep, and breathe co-ops and condos. We have an excellent group of attorneys here at Seyfarth Shaw. We actually have a national condominiums and cooperatives practice. So even though I think we're going to be primarily talking about New York today, we do handle co-op and condo issues across the country. And I'm looking forward to chatting with you about e-bikes.
That's great. And we work on a few clients together. So we do have exposure during the normal working week. And even today, scheduling an annual meeting, we were going through that phase. So I appreciate your time and your expertise. And you've always been very helpful whenever we've needed, and hopefully vice versa. So let's get into the topic straight away. E-bikes and scooters, we've seen a lot of issues with, and this goes back to the Razor scooters. I think it was a few years ago where people would be charging them, they would explode, and then you'd have a fire in the building, which prompted New York City to start this process of really trying to eliminate the batteries in those buildings that are within their jurisdiction. So what, from a legal perspective, I know that we're going through this now with a lot of our buildings and upgrading all of the documents and house rules. What is the thing that led us to this path where we are now?
Well, there's been a whole host of fires in New York City buildings, started by lithium ion batteries in these devices. So a lot of buildings are taking a stance in response to those fires and trying to minimize risk to their tenants and their buildings.
Now, I understand a rental building, you have a little bit more control over the tenants based on the lease. The cooperative is similar, where you have the proprietary lease, but in a condo, it's everybody owns it by fee simple interest. And while we have to abide by the house rules, we don't really have the mechanism in place to hold feet to the fire. I don't want to make a bad pun on this one, but what do we see the difference between those three categories of buildings? And going through from a management or from an owner perspective, what are we allowed to do to really stop these from coming into the building? Are there differences of levels of engagement that we have based on those three types of residencies?
Sure. In the rental building context, I'm seeing a lot of riders to leases and lease renewals setting forth rules as to how the batteries are to be stored, how they're to be charged. Same really goes for co-op and condominium buildings as well. We've seen somewhat of a spectrum here at Seyfarth. We've got buildings that have prohibited the devices altogether and the batteries altogether and have imposed very stringent rules about, you know, the consequences if you were to have one of these devices in your apartment.
Yeah.
And then on the opposite end, and then we've got buildings that have not taken any action in response to these. And then it's somewhere in the middle are the buildings where the boards have, I shouldn't say boards, we're talking about rental buildings too, but where they're allowing the devices with certain restrictions and limitations in place in terms of how to charge it, you know. Are residents going to be required to keep the bikes or the scooters or the hoverboards, et cetera, in their apartments? Will they be allowed to store them in common areas? But really the focus I've seen is the fire department in New York has issued some guidelines. And a lot of the buildings that we work with that are taking action in response to this are really sticking to the guidelines adopting and implementing and enforcing rules consistent with those guidelines.
Okay. And in terms of, I guess, legal consequences, we've had a lot of pushback in a few buildings where somebody will say, well, that's my only method of transportation to work, or I have a motorized wheelchair. Is that something that is going to affect that? You know, maybe that's an accessibility issue. For those particular positions, are boards and owners and landlords, are we kind of entitled to still say, no, you can't have this if this is the overriding rule in the building? Or do we have to make concessions for certain people? But I guess we're walking down a slippery slope if we do that, because then we'd have to maybe apply that rule to everybody else if there were other issues that were brought up.
Yeah. So to respond to the first example you gave of somebody saying, this is my only mode of transportation, if a building has adopted or if a board has adopted a rule prohibiting these devices and someone complains, this is how I got to work, too bad. I know that sounds insensitive, yeah, but it's really too bad. That's not an excuse to risk the health and safety of the other residents if a board determines that these devices and these batteries are unsafe and they don't want them in the building. When you've got somebody that comes forward and says, I need an electric scooter because I have a mobility issue, or I need, you know, in the case of a motorized wheelchair, usually that's pretty obvious, right? Somebody's using that all the time. There is an obligation to make a reasonable accommodation. We have a handful of buildings and we have a very strong disability practice here at Seyfarth. We have received a number of requests or inquiries from buildings we represent where they have prohibited lithium ion battery powered mobility devices. And a resident has come forward with documentation establishing that they need the device. So what we've done here in response to those requests, where you have to, you know, you have an obligation to make, housing providers have an obligation to make a reasonable accommodation that doesn't present a direct threat to health and safety. So that's the standard. You know, how you go about that when you've got a resident that's coming forward saying that they need an exception to the rule, they need an accommodation, is what kind of measures can you take to allow the resident to have the device because they medically need it and they've established that they need it, but also protect everybody else in the building and avoid a catastrophic fire. I had a similar situation, or this exact situation, last week with a building that we represent, and they basically entered into an agreement with the resident setting forth what the resident would need to do in order for them to grant the accommodation. One was, you know, agree in writing to comply with the FDNY guidelines. They asked the resident to use the service entrance and service elevator, to not be bringing this thing through the main, right, the main entrance and the main corridors. They asked the resident to purchase this fireproof box. There are a few companies out there that make these boxes where you could store and charge the batteries in a fireproof, okay, container. Yeah, and then you run into some of the stickiest issues, which is, okay, a resident has agreed to take all of those steps in exchange for being permitted to have the device. What about how they get in and out of the building? Are you going to let them scoot through the lobby or scoot, right, through the service entrance up to their apartment? If it's a wheelchair, you know, obviously the resident's going to stay in a motorized wheelchair all the way up to their apartment door because they need it. But if someone's using this device, you know, because they can walk, but they need it to get around the city, are you going to allow them to go, you know, zip through a hallway on an, right, e-scooter? It's sort of, there's some delicate issues associated with that. But yeah, we're seeing a lot of accommodation requests in response to these rules.
And I've seen in a lot of house rules going back to original offering plans, probably 70s, 80s, 90s, where they actually mark out like no use of anything in the common areas or the hallways, such as a skateboard or a bike. So this would probably fall in that. But from the perspective of the board, if are they putting it just into a house rule? So if we change the house rule, is that enough, or do we have to go a further step and say, you know, this is now a change to the proprietary lease, where in the condo side, this is a change to the bylaws that would require like a supermajority of the building, either whether it's the shares or the common interest, to approve the amendment? Is the house rules enough?
It's a good question. I don't think it's been tested yet in court. As far as I know, the bulk of the buildings that I've seen implement rules here have done them in rules and regulations or in house rules. I haven't seen anyone go down the road yet of amending governing documents to permit these devices.
Okay. And in your practice, has the advice been to clients that it's in the best interest of the building to completely outlaw it?
We are not taking a position. I personally am not taking a position, and we're not taking a position as a firm as to whether or not these things should be outlawed. I mean, I can tell you personally, my son has a hoverboard. He'd be really upset if our building prohibited it. If it did, we'd get rid of it, of course. But, you know, it's hard for me. And I have a number of friends that use electric scooters to commute around. So we're not taking a position here one way or another.
Yeah.
I think it really turns on the building, the population of the building, and sort of and how people would react. You know, I had a building that prohibited them, and then there was so much backlash that they turned around and they dialed it back. They permitted the devices under certain circumstances. So people were quick to outlaw them, and then there were others that didn't take any action and then went straight to prohibiting them altogether. So I think it really depends on the building and then
what's
in the building.
Well, maybe there is some sort of a compromise. What you said before when you were saying about the fireproof box, I was almost imagining right before you had said that, actually, where if somebody could put a scooter into like a fireproof bag, you know, and charge, or if we could set up a charging station. And specifically for if they're detachable, where it's a fireproof area within the building where they can charge it, hopefully not leave it charging all the time, but charge it and then take it and then put it back into that box when the device is back or when the scooter's back in the apartment or in the building. Maybe that would be some sort of a compromise where everybody could be happy. I don't know the slightest about those fireproof containments. I don't know how much they cost. I don't know if they could even be set up for something of a charging capability for multiple, you know, stations, but that might be something that's worth looking into. I could tell you that maybe 40% of our portfolio has entertained some sort of a ban on them. And it always comes with angry emails, angry phone calls from residents who are using it. It's not popular, but it is what it is. You know, aside from that, I mean, I was watching, I'm all over TikTok, and I was watching a video yesterday of like this ICU nurse, and she's like, the things that I would never allow my kids to do if I had the chance. And one of them was riding an electric scooter. She was telling all these horror stories about people coming into the trauma ward where she was working, people with broken backs. And, you know, these are worst case scenarios, of course, and, you know, traumatic brain injuries, you know, so that's a whole other discussion, you know. But as somebody with young kids too, I see that side of it. I also see I have one in my garage for my stepson. I see the fire hazard part of it. And it's like, just be careful. But when you're living on top of 80 or more units, you all have to work together. You know, you can't just be in control of your own moment. Everybody else is responsible for the safety of everybody in the building. So it is really important. So where do you see this going from here? Do you think that it's going to be tested in the courts at some point? Do you think that it's going to be, you know, maybe this will lead to different types of charging and different types of batteries, because if there's enough of a backlash in one major metro area, maybe the makers of it would switch it up a little bit, or maybe the technology will advance to a point. But I don't know what your thoughts process is on where it might be headed in the future.
Yeah, I mean, in the New York City market, I don't see these devices going away. I think it's a really efficient way to commute, certainly cutting down on the number of cars on the road, although there's, you know, a whole slew of other risks associated with these scooters zipping by and with cars. I don't see them going away. And I really don't see ultimately most buildings prohibiting them. I think you know, the trend is going to be really to make them safer, to make the batteries safer, and to you know, the company out there that has that fireproof box, I'm sure that there's going to be many more of those to come. And there's going to be ways, like you said, to create stations within buildings or rooms within buildings to make this equipment safer.
I think we'll just found a new business. Maybe that's like an yeah. That's a market that needs to be done, and that could go worldwide. Well, cool. So beyond that, what other trends are you seeing with language to make sure that we're protecting ourselves and understanding that, you know, we can make these guidelines, but it's up to the residents to follow them? I don't think that we're at the point where, especially if people are coming into, let's say we have staff that could see common areas, they could see storage units that have maybe wire caging, and you can make sure that there's nothing there if there's an outlaw, but we really can't monitor the inside of apartments. In terms of, I guess this would be more of a house rule, but, you know, consequences, you know, is this something that rises to the level of, you know, first warning, then you get a fine? And then is it something that could be an eviction because of failure to abide by this if it is a rule? And I guess that's where we would get to testing it out in the courts, which hasn't come out yet, right?
It's going to depend on the buildings and the documents, right? Buildings that have the ability to impose fines will impose fines. I mean, to a certain extent, you're not, like you said, you're not really policing how, you know, in the buildings that are allowing this, you're not policing, and a board or management company or building staff is not going to be able to police how someone charges it, right? So the FDNY guidelines say you're not supposed to be charging things overnight. Well, nobody's going into anybody's apartment to make sure that they're not charging these things overnight. So you're asking residents, unit owners, shareholders to follow certain rules, and you're not going to really know whether or not they're going to follow them. You can make them as strict as possible. And we've included language in a few of our co-ops that have passed rules, house rules on this, that you're going to be responsible for any damage caused as a result of a fire. We have separate rules that we've drafted to prohibit the disposal of the batteries in the recycling bins or down a trash chute, et cetera. But you're really not going to know at the end of the day whether somebody's using the correct cord that came with the scooter when they go to charge it, or whether they lost the cord and are now using some sort of makeshift cord, which is where the risk comes in.
Yeah.
But again, I do think that the market is going to get a little bit better in terms of putting out safer equipment and safe, right? It's not in these companies that are producing these devices' interest to keep generating batteries and devices that are catching fire. So I think it's going to get safer on the product end, and hopefully safer for the residents as well.
I guess this would also be a good point where if there are buildings that allow them, or even those buildings that are worried that there may be some people bringing in those devices, even though they're outlawed, to make sure that everybody in the building that resides there has the proper homeowner's insurance or renter's insurance. Because just like if you have a leak that starts in your unit and is your responsibility and you damage below, or you had a fire and it damages below, that's going to be the real thing that helps protect everybody from their personal expenses of losing personal items or having things damaged. So in this case, I'm sure that the insurance companies could work it out if there is damage. And we keep seeing this, you know, the fires are constantly reported. I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, or as recently as that, I saw some article on a building that erupted in flames and, you know, it was destroyed because of these bad, I think it was a battery repair shop, actually. That's what it was. It was a battery repair shop. So we should definitely make sure that we don't lease any space out to a battery repair shop for scooters in any of our buildings, because that is, you know, totally negating our whole conversation about you're not allowed to have them, you know, that.
So, well, cool. Insurance review is a good point. You know, it's always good for buildings to do a review to collect proof of insurance from residents to the extent that the building has requirements for people to have individual policies. I mean, I had that in a building recently where there was a leak that, you know, in connection, there was an alteration being performed, there was a plumbing leak, a number of apartments got flooded out. And after that whole mess was cleaned up, the board used it as an opportunity to say, you know what, actually, they put it on the property manager, as often happens. Yep. But basically put a reach out to all the residents to turn in proof of insurance to make sure that they are in compliance with the governing documents and that they have adequate insurance in place. Another thing I'm seeing in the context of e-bikes is I've got some boards that are saying, well, should we be, you know, in the buildings that are allowing them, should we be checking these devices and approving them and making sure that they have the UL certified batteries, et cetera? And the position that I've taken on that issue is that, you know, nobody in the building is really equipped to determine whether or not a battery is properly certified. And I think it's problematic for a doorman or a building staff member to be signing off, so to speak, on a bike or an e-scooter, because in the event that something happens with that device down the road, you know, have we okayed it in some way? I had a board say to me, well, can't we just check these things and then give everybody a sticker to put on it that, you know, basically says it's been approved? And I said, absolutely not. That's the last thing we want to do.
That's a big liability issue. God forbid there's a fire. Then how do you enforce some sort of responsibility? Then it goes on the doorman. Like, that's the worst thing that you could want.
Exactly. Or really, it goes on the building, right?
It's, yeah.
So that's something that buildings should stay away from as well.
Okay. So I appreciate your help on this topic. And I'm sure that as we go through the process and go through the years and see what comes down the line, and hopefully they'll make them safer. But I understand, just like you said, you have one yourself and I have one myself in my garage, and you're really not getting away from it. It's a convenient mode of transportation. It's, you know, we're in 2023. It is what it is, but we can do our best to sort of minimize any potential for fire hazards. And I think maybe that's the next step, as opposed to a complete outlaw, as we were saying, just offer some safe places for people to charge and have some sort of a check on that. So, how do people get in touch with you if they want to reach out? And I know I'm going to put it all in the description of the podcast as well. Why don't you give me your email address and give me your phone number, and I'll put that all in there as well.
Sure. So my email address is imanevitz@cyfarth. That's imanevitz at cyfarth.com. And my direct dial telephone number is 212-218-5534.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know that we're going to have hopefully more opportunities in the future to talk about a lot. I love having attorneys on. I like hearing your experience because you see it from a different perspective than I do. I think we're all there for the protection of the building, but you have your ear more to the ground on the legal side of things. And, you know, what would really be appropriate? What can they do within the guidelines of their documents? We're there to do the same, but coming from you, as, you know, testing it out in the courts and seeing how things come along, it adds a whole other layer of protection. So I appreciate it. And for everybody listening at home, again, you can email the show at nycrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. I'll put all of my personal contact information in the description of the podcast as well. If you've made it this far, I want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Ingrid.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.